is America with Rich Valdez, powered by PolitiWeek.com.
And Rich Valdez is with us, former Christie administration official.
You work for Chris Christie, you've been in politics, done a lot of public service stuff.
Rich Valdez, columnist now with the Washington Times.
This is America.
Richie V, you're on the air with the nation. The nation.
This is America. With your host, Rich Valdez.
What's up, America? I am Rich Valdez, Valdez with an S, your liberty-loving Latino amigo, El Conservador. And I'm at Rich Valdez with an S on all the social media, so make sure you give that a follow. Check it out. And it looks like the Republicans have scored a huge victory, or at least a victory, in the Supreme Court, with the Supreme Court upholding the Arizona case, saying that voting rules do not restrict ballot access and they're not discriminatory. And we're going to get into that in a minute. But first, I want to talk about what happened yesterday at the border. Yep, you've heard about it, but I want to jump into it because we've got some audio from Donaldus Magnus, El Presidente. That's right, the 45th president of these United States, Donald J. Trump, was down at the border meeting with Governor Greg Abbott because things have gotten so bad, they've declared a state of emergency down there. And I want you to hear a little bit of what President Trump had to say. Check this out.
But the border has never been this way. It went from the best border we've ever had in the history of our country, not 20 years. You know, they like to say over a 22-year period. No, it's the best ever by far. It took 2.5 years to start the wall because we were sued by everybody. And then and largely by the Democrats in Congress, by the way. And now, by the way, they're doing a disinformation campaign. They're saying that the unsafe border is your fault. You believe this? Because they're getting killed with the border. So now they're saying, oh, we got a problem. So let's blame the sheriffs. Let's blame the governors. Let's blame everybody else but them. They're also saying it with defund the police. They came out with a term, defund the police. And they're, you know, it's well documented, that's for sure. Just look at AOC and look at Omar. How's she doing? How's her country doing, by the way? And they're telling us how to run our country right now. How are they doing? And now they're saying, no, no, it was them, us, that wanted to defund. It's like Russia, Russia, Russia. Everyone said, Russia, Russia, Russia. I said, what's that all about? And then they said, oh, you were very friendly. Well, that's been proven to be false. Not only false, it was them that were associated with Russia. It was them, the Democrats and Hillary and the group that gave money to Russia. So it's a disinformation campaign, and it's a terrible campaign where they're trying to say this is a disaster for them. Let's blame the people that have really done something about it and can do something about it. But when your hands get tied because you no longer control the White House or Congress, it's a disgrace.
And you know what? Governor Abbott is right. And they were there in Weslaco, Texas, when he says, we're not rolling out the red carpet. This isn't going to be that Biden red carpet treatment that we're giving to illegal aliens just coming into the country how they want, not how the country wants. He's right. And it should never be that way. And I know I'm preaching to the choir. I know you guys know this. But Trump went on to talk about how Biden continuously gets it wrong. And maybe it's because his cognitive ability isn't what it once was. Talking about when they made fun of Ronnie Jackson, who later became a congressman. And Trump was joking about that. I want you to hear a little bit more of this audio we have from Weslaco, Texas on Wednesday. Check this out.
And there's my doctor right over there. My doctor. He said, you know, sir, if you want, you're really smart. You ought to take the cognitive test. I said, oh, what's that? Doc Ronnie, right? Now we call him Mr. Congressman. What a job you've done, Ronnie. They went after him and it didn't work out too well. There you are. The Democrats went after him like you wouldn't believe. But he did a test. Did I ace it?
Yes, sir.
I aced it. And I'd like to see Biden ace it. He won't ace it. He'll get the first two. There's 35 questions, and the first two or three are pretty easy.
Maybe the animals.
They're the animals. Is this a lion, a giraffe? When he gets to around 20, he's going to have a little hard time. I think he's going to have a hard time with the first few, actually.
Now, it's not just Biden's cognitive abilities that are failing, but it's his policies on the border. I mean, Trump wasn't lying when he said we had the best border. Now the Democrats are blaming governors and sheriffs for the problem that they have created because they didn't maintain the Trump policies. Listen to this.
But the border has never been this way. It went from the best border we've ever had in the history of our country, not 20 years. You know, they like to say over a 22-year period. No, it's the best ever by far. It took 2.5 years to start the wall because we were sued by everybody. And then and largely by the Democrats in Congress, by the way. And now, by the way, they're doing a disinformation campaign. They're saying that the unsafe border is your fault. You believe this? Because they're getting killed with the border. So now they're saying, oh, we got a problem. So let's blame the sheriffs. Let's blame the governors. Let's blame everybody else but them. They're also saying it with defund the police. They came out with a term, defund the police. And they're, you know, it's well documented, that's for sure. Just look at AOC and look at Omar. How's she doing? How's her country doing, by the way? And they're telling us how to run our country right now. How are they doing? And now they're saying, no, no, it was them, us, that wanted to defund. It's like Russia, Russia, Russia. Everyone said, Russia, Russia, Russia. I said, what's that all about? Then they said, oh, you were very friendly. Well, that's been proven to be false. Not only false, it was them that were associated with Russia. It was them, the Democrats and Hillary and the group that gave money to Russia. So it's a disinformation campaign, and it's a terrible campaign where they're trying to say this is a disaster for them. Let's blame the people that have really done something about it and can do something about it. But when your hands get tied because you no longer control the White House or Congress, it's a disgrace.
It's super important for America to have safe borders. I think that goes without saying, but I think we can't say it enough. Now, what I really want to communicate to you all is I don't want to use fear and demagoguery. There are people out there, some that I like and agree with, who will use fear to be the basis of this argument. I have no issue with America turning brown. I have no issue with people speaking different languages. I do have an issue with national security. Now, some people, from immigration is a big issue for them because they're afraid of multiculturalism. They're afraid of lots of things that, quite frankly, in my opinion, may be xenophobic. But to say that you want to keep your border closed and only allow people that are legitimately allowed inside your country to be inside your country is a good thing. Now, if your reasoning for that is something else, we can talk about that another time, because I'm not going to sit here and endorse or condone any type of racialistic behavior, if you will. But this is about safety, in my opinion. This is about preventing these children, teenage girls, from being trafficked into America. And this is something that the Trump administration really cracked down on, that many people turned a blind eye to for whatever reason, whether it was payoffs, personal involvement, who knows? But Trump took a hardline approach on this. And that's why I always supported that policy at the border. Listen to Greg Abbott's comments on that. Check this out.
Things got so bad that county judges, the lead officials in the border region counties, for the first time ever, they asked me to declare disaster. You remember I declared disaster for Hurricane Harvey and some other things like that. This is the first time ever I'm aware of that a governor had to make a disaster declaration for the border situation, and yet that's exactly what we did. And then the state of Texas, with the help of Lieutenant Governor Patrick, we passed in our state budget that I just signed more than $1 billion of funding for Texas to have to step up and secure our border. And then after that, they added an additional $250 million for Texas to begin building our own border wall to keep Texas safe. And then on top of that, we have a new program because we are seeing people coming across the border who have committed crimes before, and we want to arrest these people. And we through the Texas Department of Public Safety, are working collaboratively with sheriffs to make sure we have an arrest program. We're not going to be involved in catch and release. If you're coming in the state of Texas, you will have Texas law enforcement arresting you and putting you behind bars. This isn't going to be the red carpet treatment that the Biden administration has rolled out. This is going to be time in jail that our law enforcement officials will help achieve.
I agree with that. In order for our economy to be protected, in order for teenagers and those on the come up that are building their lives, building their careers to be landscapers and have those menial jobs, we have to make sure that we don't have all of this super affordable labor coming in from other parts of the world. I mean, that makes sense. Nobody wants to be outsourced in their own country. But sadly, our borders are Vice President Kamala Harris. That's right, Kamala Harris, who shows up at the border. But it's not even really the border. It's El Paso, Texas. On top of that, she's not around. And don't think that El Trompito didn't call out Kamala Harris on this one. Check this out.
And a lot of people like to say to the media, well, we could immediately, I saw today, we should immediately go back to the Trump policy. It's not that easy now. It's not that easy. But we have a sick country in many ways. It's sick in elections and it's sick in the border. And if you don't have good elections and if you don't have a strong border, you don't have a country. So with that, we're going over to the border right now. Mm-hmm. But we're going to the real part of the border where there's real problems, not a part where you look around and you don't see anybody. We're going to admire the wall and how it works, because wherever we have the wall, that's what made the big difference. It made tremendous difference.
And yet again, he's right on the money here. We need to make sure that we have free and fair elections. We have to make sure that we have a controlled border where the country's safe and secure. That's what matters. It's foundational to the republic. It's foundational, as the Democrats would say, to our democracy. We can't practice democracy within our republic if we don't have a solid, protected border, if we don't have an election system that can't be easily manipulated like this For the People Act tries to do. That's why I opened up with this, and I'm happy that the Supreme Court upheld the Arizona voting rules that restrict ballot harvesting and the submission of provisional ballots outside of one's home precinct. They argued that, well, you know, because Arizona has military bases and people may be at their base instead of their home, and that's why they want to be able to vote wherever they want. So the Democrat National Committee challenged that. But in a 6-3 decision on Tuesday, the court ruled that neither the policy requiring provisional ballots to be completely disregarded if submitted at the wrong precinct, nor the law making it a felony to submit another person's ballot with limited exemptions, violate Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. The decision was overturned in a ruling by the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. And according to Justice Samuel Alito, neither Arizona's out-of-precinct rule nor its ballot collection law violates Paragraph 2 of the Voting Rights Act. Alito wrote in the court's opinion, this is on Fox News, foxnews.com, in which he was joined by Chief Justice John Roberts, Justices Clarence Thomas, Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh, and Amy Coney Barrett. The court noted that Arizona's law, quote, generally makes it quite easy for residents to vote. Discussing the out-of-precinct rule, Alito noted that the state made extensive efforts, his quote, to alleviate burdens by sending notices to all registered voters when precinct locations are changed and by requiring election officials to send out sample ballots to each home with a registered voter. That includes a notice of the new and proper polling location. So the court also pointed out that the Arizona Secretary of State's office sends pamphlets with polling information, etc., that voters can look at online or figure out where they need to vote. Summarizing, Alito wrote, quote, having to identify one's polling place and then travel there to vote does not exceed the usual burdens of voting, Alito wrote. On the contrary, these tasks are quintessential examples of the usual burdens of voting. How could anybody disagree with that, right? The Democrats tried to say that this was discriminatory, that because if you are black or brown, you may not have as much money as other people who have generational wealth. And because of that, you may not live in the same place for multiple years on end. And therefore, you are not in the know of where you should vote. That's ridiculous. It's ridiculous to say that because you may be poor. First of all, I think it's racist to even suggest that just because I'm black or brown, that somehow I don't have the same freedom to vote as anyone else. And the Supreme Court clearly agreed with that, saying, come on, get out of here. That's crazy. It's no additional burden. If you move, you change your registration. You move, you change your phone number, your cable bill, whatever it is. You got to change everything when you move. You can't just say, oh, because of my race, I'm somehow some white liberal guy told me that I'm not smart enough to figure out how to change my voter registration, to change my address for my phone bill, et cetera, et cetera. It's the stupidest thing. It's similar to the voter ID that kind of permanently puts blacks and Hispanics at some sort of permanent disadvantage to whites, which is a complete lie. It's a complete fabrication that they've come up with. Yet nobody seems to call them out. I guess I shouldn't say nobody. Many people allow it to go uncalled out. How about that? Because I think there's plenty of people there that do call it out, but we need more. More people need to call out the Democrats on this stupidity that they use as logic to say that we're being discriminated against because of voting laws. You register to vote and you vote in the place closest to your house. It's been this way for hundreds of years. Now to say, well, for hundreds of years, we've been systemically racist. And because I might work in Manhattan, I got to get home early. And because, again, a white guy might have the ability to take off from work or go to work early, but a black guy or a Hispanic guy may not have the same opportunity to leave work early. I think this has nothing to do with race. They're injecting race as some sort of cop-out, some sort of excuse. I think it's fake, it's phony, it's fraud, in the words of the great Bob Grant, and it's fugazi. Anyway, we're going to continue to celebrate this election victory, and I want to talk about so much of the BS that's going on in Washington, D.C., from Ilhan Omar to The Daily Show on Comedy Central. Anyway, don't move a muscle. I'm Rich Valdez. This is America.
This is America. He's making podcasting great again. This is America with Rich Valdez.
All right, bienvenido, America. Welcome back. Rich Valdez, Valdez with an S on all the social media. Make sure you check out the flagship website, richvaldez.com, Rich Valdez with an S, at Rich Valdez on all the social media. Getting a lot of love on Instagram lately, so I've been trying to put some videos up there and keep in touch. I'm really bad at doing social media. I check it once, twice, sometimes three times a day when everybody, every agent, manager, producer that I've ever worked with has told me, you got to be on it more often. You've got to be on it. You got to post more videos. People need, you got to go live. I hate going. The only thing I like to do live is go on the radio, but I'm going to get better at it. I promise. I realize more and more people are doing it and I'm the guy that's kind of slowing things down. So make sure you check me out on Instagram as well as Parler. We're still at it on Parler, although they've made some changes. I think it's a little bit easier to use now than it was a couple of weeks back, but I want to stay in touch with you guys. And I know not everybody's on at the same time. So social media gives us an opportunity to post questions and interact at all hours of the day, especially since you may have heard me on KTTH in Washington, or you might have heard me on WABC in New York whenever I fill in for the great one, Mark Levin. And you may want to keep in touch with this program. Make sure that you're subscribed to this show. If this is your first time listening because somebody sent you a link to this, make sure you click subscribe in your podcast app, because this way you'll get notified every time there's a new episode. That's, of course, preaching to the choir for all of you that are subscribed. Thank you very much. It's an honor to have all of you on board. But I want to talk about what's going on in Washington, because Ilhan Omar, you know, she's always under fire, and rightfully so. She says so many idiotic things that are just so not rooted in, I'm going to say, the facts, honestly. A lot of times it's sheer opinion, and her opinion seems to be biased against America in most cases. But Ilhan Omar, she's under fire yet again because she says, you know what, I don't regret grouping the U.S., Israel, and these groups with terrorist groups. Listen to this.
On the subject of the Middle East, you upset, as you know, many of your fellow House Democrats after comments you made earlier this month about the U.S. and Israel. You were questioning Secretary of State Blinken about where victims of war crimes could get justice. You made comments to him, and also you tweeted, quote, "We must have the same level of accountability and justice for all victims of crimes against humanity. We have seen unthinkable atrocities committed by the U.S., Hamas, Israel, Afghanistan, and the Taliban," unquote. Ultimately, Democratic leaders said that equating the U.S. and Israel with Hamas and the terror and the Taliban, quote, "foments prejudice." And as you know, a group of Jewish House Democrats wrote a letter to President Biden saying that accusing Israel of acts of terror, as you and other members of the squad have done, is anti-Semitic. Do you regret these comments?
I don't. I think it's really important to think back to the point that I was trying to make. Obviously, I was addressing Secretary of State Blinken. The cases are put together in front of the ICC. ICC has been investigating. I know that, you know, some of my colleagues don't lend legitimacy to the ICC, but I tend to think that people around the world who have experienced injustice need to be able to have a place where they can go. And as a country that helped found the ICC and supported it, I think that it is really important for us to continue to find ways in which people can find justice around the world.
So there she is, Ilhan Omar, with who my buddy Mr. Producer likes to call Fake Tapper from CNN, with a clip from Breitbart, by the way. Shout out to Breitbart. And she says, look, I don't think it's really important to think back to the point that I was trying to make. Oh, isn't that great? So you say something when you're making a point. You get criticized even by your own party for making that point because they agree that it's anti-Semitic and it's wrong, it's anti-American to compare the United States to terrorist organizations. Although she may truly believe that, which is what I believe. I believe she really thinks America is a terrorist organization and she's working from within, from inside of Congress to undo America, or at least to create the America she wants to see. Now, this to me is problematic because she's entitled to feel that way, but we're entitled to feel the way that we do also. And it somehow seems like her voice is louder than ours. And that's the problem. And we need to work to address that. And I know people like to be defeatists sometimes. We all get into that funk. We all get into that mode where it's like every time I try something, the answer is no and no and no and no. And I feel like we're losing all the time. So what are we going to do? I say, all right, tranquilízate, relax, calm down, take a deep breath. We're not always losing. Look at the Supreme Court victory on the election rules, upheld by the Supreme Court. Trump is down at the border, doing his thing, not being censored by the media. We got to celebrate these small victories as we move forward towards the bigger victories and stop thinking that it's a wash, it's all over, we can't do it. The minute we do really think that way, then that's really it, right? I mean, the old saying, I think it was Henry Ford, whether you think that you can or you think that you can't, you're right. So we need to start thinking that we can, and people need to stop rejecting advice they don't like. And by that, I mean, people call me, I talk to them on the phone. I don't mean to be rude, it just sometimes happens. Forgive me, I happen to be rude by nature, and I apologize for that. Blanket statement to everybody listening, I probably offend you at some point, my bad. Please forgive me. But the point that I'm making here is people call and they're like, what do we do? And I tell them, oh, this is what you got to do is, you know, join your local school board. This is something that I did for almost 10 years. I was on a school board. I loved it. And others talk about being a school board member. It's a great place to get involved in your local policy planning, local policy creation. But most people, oh, I can't do that. I'm too old. Oh, I can't do that. I've got little kids. Oh, I can't do that. I have a job. All right, then you've got to figure out what you want to do. Do you want to make a difference or not? Because writing a $50 check isn't always going to do it. You actually have to get off your butt and do something. I'm not trying to insult anybody that's listening. That's the last thing I want to do. But I am saying, sometimes we don't like the medicine we have to take. And that's exactly what we have going on here. We have to make a change. We have to take back organizations that have been infiltrated with leftist ideology. How do you do that? But for becoming a reporter, but for becoming a professor, but for becoming a politician, going into the swamp and trying to fix it from the inside out. Like El Trompito, Donaldus Magnus, the 45th president of these United States. That's what he did. Because he figured out if he didn't do it, guys like Joel Barroso Biden and Kamala Harris, the vice president, were going to do it anyway and take the country even further left. Now, just because he's a billionaire doesn't preclude the rest of us. I used to make a pretty good living doing things within the realm of marketing, even though I worked in government and higher ed and the kind of cross-section thereof. And it's a lot harder to make a living as a podcaster, as a radio host, as a producer in talk radio. It's definitely not as lucrative as many people think. But you do have to make sacrifices. And again, I'm not trying to break my own arm patting myself on the back, at least not this second. I'll do that later. But I am saying we've got to do more. I've got to do more. You've got to do more. Change just doesn't happen because somebody goes on TV, we like what they say, and then we're like, yeah, that's good. That guy would be a great candidate. No, man, we need more. You need to step up. You need to do more. You need to get involved. You need to recruit your neighbors, friends, meet new people, get them on board. You need to make a podcast, radio show, TV show, whatever, YouTube channel. Things won't happen unless we make them happen. And I'm not saying pick one of those. I'm saying do them all. Run for office. Start a podcast. Do a video stream. Do it all. Donate the $50. Join the campaign. Start volunteering. We have to do more. Nothing worth having will come easily. Nothing worth having is going to come without sacrifice. We have to make a sacrifice. Another old idiom, axiom, from Gandhi. Be the change you want to see in the world. If we want to see things that we've never seen, we're going to have to do things we've never done in order to see that happen. Back to Ilhan Omar, Mrs. Some People Did Something herself. She went on to say that House Democrats have been critical of her because they themselves are engaged in Islamophobic tropes. Instead of saying, you know what, I see that my colleagues disagree with what I'm saying. I'm sorry if I offended you or the Republicans, my colleagues across the aisle, whatever. Being a statesman or a stateswoman, if we can say that, or a state's birthing person. Instead, she decides to say that, no, it's those people. They're Islamophobes. Because that's how they do it. They always point the finger. Listen, if you want to point the finger, you can. But you better have a solid argument. Because in this one, I don't think she scores. Listen to this.
Well, what do you say to them? I hear everything you're saying about your fight for justice. But what do you say to them when they say, I hear what you're saying, but the terms you're using, the language you're using is anti-Semitic?
No, I hear that. I have obviously clarified and, you know, apologized when I have felt that my words have offended. And it's really important, right? As I've explained to my colleagues, they have engaged in Islamophobic tropes. I have yet to receive an apology. I think, you know, when we are engaging in a space where we don't know how our language will be received, it is important for us to be open-minded. And I think I have always been someone who is humbled, someone who understands how words can be harmful and hurtful to people. And I've always listened and learned and behaved accordingly and showed up with compassion and care.
Oh, so now she wants to clarify and apologize. Well, good for you. You have to. Sometimes you realize you've pushed it too damn far. But it seems like the squad, in and of themselves, part of their mission within the Democrat Party as progressives trying to take over the party is to always push the norms as far as they can until they have to retreat. Because they're there with the express intention of making change. And let there be no mistaking that. So when she says compassion and care, I'm not buying it. She's never struck me as somebody that's coming across as somebody being caring or compassionate. But I'll let you decide on that. You can tweet at me. Let me know what your thoughts are or put it on Facebook or Instagram. At Rich Valdez with an S, at Rich Valdez. Or you can hit me up on the website. We have a Contact Rich, Contact Us feature that a lot of people use, and I really do read. I definitely check those out. I may not be able to get back to everybody, but I love to hear your comments and feedback and questions and topic ideas for the show. So make sure you keep that coming. And we've got to stop this stuff. Because today it's four people, the squad. At least they have the domination of the media's attention. But there's plenty more squad members that are coming out in local elections, step by step, city council, other local offices. Soon they'll run for Congress. They may lose, but they'll come back. We saw one of the most left-wing DA candidates I've ever seen in New York, Tiffany Caban, and she almost won. It was a nail-biter. We're looking at leftists in New York City who are on the ballot that are overtaking moderates. This is a big war within the Democrat Party. I don't know why the Democrats don't team up with conservatives and say, all right, we're going to join you and fight these guys. And we can, you know, do a Machiavellian exercise of being the enemy of my enemy. So you're now my friend and fighting that. And then we could fight again tomorrow. But they're not. But they will continue to affect the media. They will continue to affect city councils. They'll be in every level of every institution in America because they control the narrative. And unless we get inside and take it back, little by little, incrementally, that's what they do. They believe in incrementalism. That's how they did it. I mean, we're talking about Comedy Central, right? Comedy Central, where Trevor Noah makes his jokes and one of his correspondents, Roy Wood, goes on The Daily Show Wednesday night and he says something critical about Mark Levin, trying to take him out of context. And I want you to listen to this. Check it out.
We're not getting any closer to solving this mystery. Basically, the only thing we know about critical race theory is that it has something to do with race. Or does it?
It's not even about race. It's about destroying the existing society. Using race. Using gender. Using the climate. Using immigration.
Critical race theory isn't even about race? Is it a theory? Is it critical? Is it real at all? Is it possible critical race theory is a mass hallucination we're all having, the result of 15 months spent locked in our apartments and spraying Windex on all of our groceries. Nobody knows.
Now listen, I appreciate a good joke as much as the next guy. But one thing I don't appreciate is taking people out of context and slandering them. Now, sometimes if you have a different viewpoint like I do, it's happened to me, where because I already know how somebody thinks, or at least I have an opinion of how they think, when they say something to me, I hear it a certain way, when it can in fact be meant another way. And I'm willing to take a step back and admit if I'm wrong, or that I didn't consider all the facts in making my determination that they're idiots. So I'm cool with that. Maybe I made a mistake, but in a situation like this, when he's saying that critical race theory isn't about race, he's talking about critical theory by and large. And if you don't know about it, you should check out the book, American Marxism, and get a copy. Pre-order it now on Amazon so that you can get an idea of it. And it's literally free if you want to listen from 6 to 9 p.m. on pretty much every conservative talk radio station in America, or at least the vast majority of them, because I think this is a defining topic of our time. Whether you call it critical race theory, or you call it social justice, or you call it whatever you want, there's no denying that there is a constant push on grammar school kids, on high school kids, on people through their workplace. Everywhere you go, somebody's trying to tell you that it's super important to be focused on race. Meanwhile, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King spent most of his career trying to do the exact opposite, saying, forget about race, focus on the content of one's character. So clearly the left, the Democrats, progressives, the left within the media, they're all pushing a racial narrative that didn't exist prior to Obama, where everybody got along and they were like, yeah, that's my buddy's father, that's my buddy. Now it's, oh, that's my buddy Tom, and he's black. That's his dad, Sam. He's black too. All of a sudden, we have to be hyper-focused on race. This is why you have members of BLM accosting people in their cars. City council members telling them, listen, you're going to give us immunity from attacking you in your car. And we're going to make you sign it right here, right now. That is absolute insanity. Absolute insanity. But it continues to happen. Kamala Harris goes on television talking about strengthening democracy, that we have to fight for gender equality moving forward. Well, I have the clip. You know, I wasn't going to play it, but I'm going to play it just so you could hear it, because I read the transcript and I say, huh? Listen to this.
And as we move forward, I believe that if we want to strengthen democracy, we must fight for gender equality. Because here's the truth. Democracy is strongest when everyone participates, and it is weaker when people are left out. And we've seen this here in the United States. When women have access to capital to start a small business, they can participate more fully, and our democracy grows stronger. When women have access to reproductive health care to stay healthy, they can participate more fully, and our democracy grows stronger. When women live free from the fear of violence, they can participate more fully, and our democracy grows stronger.
So now I've got to ask you a question. How many women do you know? Do you know people that are suffering from violence specifically because they're women? I'm not saying that violence against women doesn't happen. Violence against men, violence against all races. There's all sorts of violence going on. I'm 4 miles from Times Square. It's a very violent place. But to suggest that it's because you're a woman that there's violence coming your way, I think is farcical. I don't think people are specifically, at least not en masse, not in any grand scale, is somebody saying, because you're a woman, I'm going to hurt you. That doesn't mean there aren't predators that are specifically looking for women because they may be smaller than they are or whatever you may have. That's a different story than just saying all women are being threatened by anybody that's not a woman because the fact that they're women. It's a false narrative, but they're trying to promote that the same way they try to promote the whole racism thing. Everybody's looking for a bone to pick. Now, on the last episode or the one before that, make sure you catch up on the last three episodes. Please do me that favor. Catch up on the last three episodes of This Is America, because it's a series and we kind of revert back to the stuff that we discussed already and it builds upon the next one. And I don't want you to skip a beat on this stuff. But Gwendolyn Berry. Gwen Berry, she's a gold medalist Olympian representing the United States. You know about this already. We've talked about it. But she made a statement yesterday, and she wanted to talk about how obvious the national anthem's third paragraph is to slavery. Now, this is one where I'm going to agree with her and say, yes, there's lots of things that are in American history that are obvious to slavery, because slavery was a big part of America's history. Nobody's, at least I'm not condoning it. I'm saying I'm from the era where slavery was illegal, where I was taught that black people are my equal, and that we're all Americans, and that we're supposed to focus on the content of one's character, not the color of their skin. That is how I grew up. So I think racism's bad. I think slavery is bad. But that doesn't mean we're going to erase it. My dad struggled with alcoholism. I don't think that I need to erase that part of my dad's past. I think I need to acknowledge it and say, man, that was messed up. I'm not going to do that to my children. And my dad realized it, got better, and lived his final days as healthy as he could. But the point I make is we can't erase the past saying, you know, that was bad. Yeah, it was bad. And we should never minimize it. It was bad. Punto y final. Period, the end. Let's move forward and not be bad anymore. Isn't that how life works? At least that's how it works where I come from. But Gwen Berry says, we've got to eliminate this thing. And I think, you know what? This is just absolute nonsense. Anyway, straight ahead, we're going to get into Biden. Biden had a few things to say, and I want to talk about those, break them down to you, and wrap this thing up. So don't move a muscle. Keep it locked right there. I am Rich Valdez, and this is America.
This is America.
What's up, America? Welcome back. All right, here we are wrapping it up. Segment 3 on the Thursday edition of This is America. And I want to just play a clip of audio before I get into the Biden stuff, because this one clip to me was really interesting. It's from a school board meeting, Pensbury, Pennsylvania. And you hear the school board people, the actual board, yelling and berating the parents who were calling them out for their quote unquote equity policy, which is rooted in the idea of critical race theory, the idea that all blacks are oppressed, that all BIPOC, not to be confused with Tupac, but all black indigenous people of color are somehow oppressed, and that if you're white, you're automatically an oppressor. And there's more. Of course, I'm oversimplifying. There's more to this, and you can read about it. But on its face, this stuff is not good to teach children. It's a bad concept. It doesn't mean you erase the past. It doesn't mean you don't say that there were slave-owning racist Democrats in the South that wanted to divide America and secede. This is why when people come to me and go, what are your thoughts on secession? I think, like, how stupid are you? Secession? Really? But again, I realize I'm a Yankee, and they may not be. So I'm cool with disagreeing agreeably, but no thanks. We're not seceding. Not the answer. There's strength in numbers. United we stand, divided we fall. That's literally what the Democrats want to do to us. But this school board had an interesting meeting, and this one school board member, and again, I was a school board member, I think this guy was totally out of line, but I want you to check this out.
You're getting into irrelevant things. We're just going to stop you there. You're done.
What made you the king of this board?
You're done. We're not going to take it. That is irrelevant.
That's important because it breaks.
You're done, Mr.
No, I'm not.
Yes, you are, Mr. Marshall. You're done. You are done.
I will sue you as well.
Fine. You're done.
No, I'm not.
You're done.
What? Based on what?
Board policy 903. You are now being disruptive and disorderly. You're done. You're done.
You know what?
You're finished.
You can count on being sued.
I said you're done.
You didn't need an equity officer.
I said you're done. Mr. Daly, sit down. All right. You're done. We're not going through this again, Mr. Abrams. That is not what the equity program is about. We're not going to sit here and listen to you. You're done. You're done. You're done.
Honestly, after what you did to the last two, I think you are.
Equity and critical race theory audit was reviewed, and the crux of that was that there were different...
I apologize. It's not what it's called. That is not...
That's how I'm addressing it.
That's what I'm calling it.
I understand,
Your comments are irrelevant, then, if you're not going to call it by the right term.
This is
the equity policy.
Look, some people call
it's the equity policy.
All right. I'm telling you what I think it is, but if you'd like, I'll use your term, although I disagree with it. Fair enough? Right.
Equity policy. Go ahead.
Parents have every right. Members of the community have every right. You could be 80 years old, live in the community, and decide, I've never had a kid, never had a kid that attended school, and I'm going to go and give them a piece of my mind at the school board meeting, and that is your right. Because you pay those school taxes through your property tax. You are a citizen, a resident of that community, and this school board is responsible to you, and primarily to those children, in which they're entrusted to educate. And we've gone so far away from the mark that it's not funny. But I want you to keep that in mind, because this is all the result of Biden's policies. He's only been in office for a couple of months. And look at the mess that he's making. We saw the same thing happen with Barack Obama. He went from being in favor of the Defense of Marriage Act to seeing the White House illuminated in the colors of the gay flag. A complete 180, a complete change of what society was used to at that time. He did what he said he was going to do. He was going to change things fundamentally because he's a radical, and that's what radicals do. So now we have Biden pushing all of these radical agendas. The climate, if it rained today, it's the fault of climate change. You see, the climate's changing because you're evil somehow. Some Republicans somewhere littered, and that's why. We don't have enough laws. We don't have enough rules. We don't have enough regulations. That's going to save the planet. Ay, ay, ay. Ay, bendito is all I can say for everybody that buys into all of this hype. But Joe Biden is still at it, spewing his stupidities. At the White House yesterday, Joe Biden's talking about climate change and how it's driving the dangerous confluence of extreme heat and prolonged drought. Extreme heat used to be called a heat wave, but Biden's figured this thing out. Listen to this.
I realize I'm preaching to the choir here. I know you all know this better than any other people in the country. The fire season traditionally lasts through October. But with climate change is driving the dangerous confluence of extreme heat and prolonged drought. We're seeing wildfires of greater intensity that move with more speed, and last well beyond traditional months, the traditional months of the fire season. And that's a problem for all of us. Wildfires are not a partisan phenomenon. They don't stop at a county or a state line, or a country line for that matter.
Woo! Joe El Baboso Biden is definitely babiando here, let me tell you. I mean, he's talking about climate change. He's trying to continue to push this, I'm going to call it conspiracy theory, right? Because whenever you say something on the other side that they don't like, they'll say, oh, that's a conspiracy theory. So we're going to say Biden's pushing conspiracy theories. And he's talking about how the seasonal job of forest fires is now a full-time job, and we don't have to play the audio, but I just think it's funny. Everything's so hot, you know, because of climate change. Now you got jobs, firemen. You guys got jobs because, well, you know, because I helped you out because of climate change. But, you know, you might be out of a job because if we fix climate change, then, you know, it might be seasonal again. Who knows what Joe Biden's really trying to say? I think the guy is in over his head. I'm not going to say he's just, you know, totally inept. Although I think on things like the border, his vast ineptitude is clearly evident. But by and large, I think he's very familiar being in political territory. And when it comes to making good policy, he's like, I don't worry about it. I'll use the politics to cover the policy. It doesn't work that way, sir. We're real people that need real policies because we have real problems. Like an open border. These are the issues that he ignores. Now, one issue that I'm going to bring up just for the sake of argument, and I literally mean that for the sake of argument, there's this audio clip here from Ellie Mistel, justice correspondent from The Nation on MSNBC, talking about January 6th. And of course, all of Biden's stupidities and the fire that he's poured onto that, or I should say the gas he's poured onto that fire, talking about how these January 6th hearings, these partisan hearings, are going to be the equivalent of the 47 Benghazi hearings. Now, I will say, while it was fun political theater to watch the Benghazi hearings, after the first, I don't know, 13 led by Trey Gowdy, all I could say was, we're not getting anywhere. And this is going to look like a witch hunt, which the Democrats are now going to pay us back for with this January 6th stuff. So contrary to what a lot of people think, I think this is part and parcel of the political game. When you're in Washington, what we did with Benghazi, knowing we were never going to get anywhere, but it was oversight. So we just wanted to kind of air it out, let people know, correcting the record. And I think this is where people are misled. Oftentimes, people who've never worked in government, and I spent some time in the Christie administration, and I understand how a deep state can work from the state level, and I can only imagine it's that much worse in Washington, is that I think people lose sight of the fact that these guys have no law enforcement capability. All they can do is write a paper called a referral to the FBI, and we all know a whole lot doesn't seem to be happening when it comes to the FBI, and say, hey, I think there may be criminality here based on X, Y, and Z that we've discovered through our oversight investigation. You should check that out. And that's it. They can say, yeah, we'll take a look at it in 18 months when we get to it. Or, yeah, we decided we're not going to do that. It looks overtly political. Thanks, but no thanks. That's how Washington works. And for many, many decades, until Trump came around and kind of shook things up, these things were suitable for most people. Most people were happy with the idea that, oh, you know what? The FBI said they're going to take a look at it. Congress said they're going to make a criminal referral. Well, there you go. The wheels of justice are moving, our government in action. Well, damas y caballeros, ladies and gentlemen, I think we've now seen that a lot of this stuff is perfunctory. They already know the outcome and they're just going through the numbers. Nobody's going to jail. People are not going to be incarcerated when they work within the government and it's their friends that enforce the laws. Congress makes the laws and the executive branch enforces the laws. Yes, there will be some instances of Manafort and Stone and things like that. But by and large, we're not going to see a sweeping arrest of all of Congress. And it's not that I don't want them to be. I just know we're not going to. We are outnumbered. And people say, oh, but there's 81 million. Then those 81 million people need to get into Congress now. They need to get into their state legislatures now. Because we can't even rely on Republicans in most cases. Right? Right. So if we already know all of this now, we have to readjust our plan and figure out how we actually take things back. Or we decide, I'm done. I'm not going to do anything. I will let America fall on my watch. I say, hell no. That's not something I'm going to allow. And it's not something that you should allow. Political theater isn't going anywhere. We cannot live our lives hanging on every word that comes out of the mouth of the next talking head, myself included. We have to just look at things and be able to discern what's right from what's wrong and figure out what we're willing to sacrifice to make America better. We know what the problems are. Let's work on eliminating those problems and providing solutions. And it's going to require activism. It's going to require door knocking. It's going to require organizing. It's going to require, honestly, most of what the left has been doing for decades. We need to catch up. There's a lot of catch up. It's time to get moving. We have to stand for something, because if we stand for nothing, we will fall for anything. That's from Hamilton. And the only thing necessary for evil to triumph is for good people like you to do nothing. And I know you're not going to do nothing, because you're going to do something because you love America just like I do. So until the next time, hasta la próxima. Make sure you get at us on social media. Check out therichvaldez.com. Buy a t-shirt if you can. And we're going to get into this again over the weekend. Hasta la próxima. I am Rich Valdez, and this is America.
This is America.